Good to see all of you guys today. We're missing a few folks. A few people are away, but boy, it's good to be gathered together as the family of God, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing. Look forward to Sundays. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 10 as we continue our walk through Genesis. Now, last week we looked at an unfortunate incident that took place between our friend Noah and one of his own sons. His name was Ham. Honey Ham, to be more specific. I love Honey Ham. It's good stuff. Smoked ham, it's all yummy. Sorry, I'm just kind of stalling because I'm trying to find a verse here. Okay, I think I got it now. Yeah. We saw an unfortunate incident when Noah got off the ark. He did two things. What was the first thing he did? He went and built an altar before the Lord. Good priority, Noah. Get off the ark. Shows his family, hey, first thing we need to do is show our devotion before the Lord our God. Good priorities. Didn't get, you know, distracted by all the other things that would have needed to happen. You know, cleaning out the ark of all the messy animals that had made all that. Now, just sorry, I'm going to leave that and build an altar. Second thing he did. Anybody want to throw out what they think the second thing is Noah did? Anybody remember from our study of last week? He built what? Built an altar, first of all, then he built a vineyard. Noah, come on. And we see the consequences of that as he began to drink of the wine from that vineyard and got drunk. Ended up falling asleep in his tent naked. Noah, this great man of God, this great patriarch in the Bible, slipping and falling. We're seeing him to be a bit human. And it's kind of comforting to know that, hey, God still works through individuals that are human, that are weak, that might stumble along the way. He doesn't just look for perfect people. Because if he did that, I would not be here this morning speaking before you. If it was only perfect people, I wouldn't fit the mold there. But Ham, his son, went into the tent and began to gaze at his father in his nakedness. And he came out and he told with delight his brothers, Shem and Japheth, and said, hey, look what dad's doing. And they're all, it's a riot. You guys got to come and see this. Man, it's incredible. I can't believe our dad. Oh my goodness, what a hoot this is. And he began to tell his brothers with delight. And the thing that we saw was that Ham was being very disrespectful towards his father Noah. What did Shem and Japheth do? They came in and they said, you know what? They got a blanket, they put over their shoulders, and they walked in backwards so that they could lay this blanket down on their father's nakedness, and so that they would not expose his father, so that they would not even see it and disrespect him. Shem and Japheth took the right route here. Joe's not here today, but we got talking last week about this passage, and Joe is bringing up some very good insight, and I didn't have a chance to cover a verse that I wanted to, but let me share it with you. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8 says, and above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. Love is going to cover a multitude of sins. Was Ham acting in love towards his father? No, because he was wanting to expose that sin. And we see the consequence that it had. It had consequences upon an entire race, because Noah went now and prophesied later on at the end of chapter 9 there. And he gave this curse towards Canaan, Ham's son. You know, you might see somebody that's stumbling and falling and think, oh, look at that person. Oh, what a sad, sad case. And you might even begin to mock that person and begin to whisper to your friends, look at that person over there. Oh, they're such a bad sinner. Look at them. And we can mock and we can expose one another. Yet, what does the Bible want us to do? What does the Lord want us to do? To walk in love. Greatest commandment was love the Lord your God with all your heart. Second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. Because love is going to cover a multitude of sins. Love is going to keep you from exposing one another. In fact, it'll come to that person's aid. It'll come beside that person who might have stumbled, who might need help. And love will cause you to come and be a help. And to cover them, to help them in their time of need. And we see that with Shem and Japheth. But Ham paid the price. His sons, more specifically Canaan, paid the price. And now as we get into chapter 10 here, we are going to be looking at what has been called the Table of Nations. We are going to see how these three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, how we see all the different races and nationalities in the world today that have come all from these three people. You might think, how did people get scattered so far abroad? How did people look so differently? How come people have certain skin colors or certain features that are very different than another person? How did that all originate? How did that all come about? Well, hopefully we'll begin to see a bit of insight that will begin to unfold to us as we look through this Table of Nations. We are going to be looking at 70 different families or nations that are going to be revealed to us here in Genesis chapter 10. All stemming from Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Three people that, one of those people we came from. We are all related, more specifically, right to Noah. Okay, we all like to go back to Adam. But you know what? There was several years between Adam and Noah. And more specifically, we can say, well, those people were all wiped out in the flood. So we all can trace our roots back to Noah, which brings everything even closer together in time. And we're going to look at these various groups that began to sprout off from these three sons of Noah. Are you all in Genesis 10? Let's look at verse 1. Now this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah. Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and sons were born to them after the flood. So we're making it very clear that after the flood, there were only eight people in the world. Noah, his wife, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their wives. Because this is now taking place after the flood, and they want to make that clear so we cannot trace things back to before the flood, or it's just maybe a global, or it was just kind of a regional flood that took place. No, it was global. And this is all happening after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshach, and Tiras. If you are going to be having kids in the future, I would suggest you don't revert back to the Old Testament names that we see here as trying to find a name for your son, because you know what? You're just going to give that kid a lot of heartache growing up. Because if you name your son Gomer, you know, chances are he's not going to have a very pleasant school life and with other friends and stuff of that. Magog, same thing. So, you know, I can recommend some good children names books to you, but don't look at Genesis 10. It's not going to be a help. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. From these, the coastland people of the Gentiles were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. Now, as we look at Ham, Shem, and Japheth, three key figures here, we're going to begin to understand a bit of the placement of the people and the different nationalities, different nations and countries that we see around our world today, and why people are kind of there and their background, that sort of thing. Ham, his name means black. It's believed that Ham's skin color was of a dark nature. We often think, well, how did some people get dark colored skin? How come some people have white, you know, Caucasoid people? Why do they have white skin? Why are some people kind of in between, you know? It's very possible that Noah and his wife had both of those kinds of genes within their system, that when they, you know, had kids, and it could have easily been either one that could have come together. You know that when a black person marries a white person, that their kids are going to be kind of an in-between skin color. And if you take two people with that kind of in-between skin color and they have kids, you know what? Their offspring could be any sort of nine different colors across the board. You begin to see the different mixes that come into play here. We're going to get more into that later on here, possibly. Ham, it's believed his name was black, and possibly that he was black skin colored. Shem, his name means glory, kabod in the Hebrew. God's glory would be with him. Who remembers from our previous study who the descendants of Shem were? Anybody want to throw that out? His descendants were the Semite people, Israelites, and also the Arabs in the world. The Semite people. So we see that the Israelites had their line from Shem, and his name means glory. God's glory would be with them. Japheth means enlarged one. Not that he ate a lot and began to expand around the waistline. That's not what enlarged one implies here. But it means that he was going to be spread out, and his name also has an implication of ruler, enlarged one, ruler. Japheth, his descendants were basically the Europeans that spread out across the land. And they were the ones that really began to rise into power and be in places of authority, be in positions of ruling. That's the descendants of Japheth. Now we're looking, the verses I read, the sons of Japheth, they were Gomer. Gomer is believed to be Germany. The descendants of Gomer began to settle there in German. We got some Germans here that are going, all right, there's our Gomer. Okay, you guys all came from Gomer. Magog is believed to be Russia. Tubal, Tobolsk. And Meshach is believed to be Moscow. It's interesting that these three, the last three I read, Magog, Tubal, and Meshach, play an important part in end times prophecy. Ezekiel chapter 38 and chapter 39. Turn with me actually to chapter 38 of Ezekiel, because we'll begin to see some of these names come out again here. These two chapters are an important part in end times prophecy, because what is unfolding for us here in chapter 38 and chapter 39 of Ezekiel, if you guys are students of prophecy in end times, we see that this is an end times invasion that is going to take place against Israel. It's going to happen either before the rapture, or it's going to happen immediately after the rapture. And what's going to happen are these countries are going to come together, and they are going to come against Israel to attack them. But what's going to happen is there is going to be a divine intervention, and these people are going to be stopped. Their plan is going to be thwarted. In fact, it says that their plains are, or when they came in, they just began to fall and become desolate and killed off. And in fact, the nations around them began to use their fuel for 7 years, it says, fitting with the seven-year tribulation, isn't it? It's very interesting. But we see here in chapter 38, now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, Moscow, and Tubal, Tobolsk, and prophesy against him, and say, Thus says the Lord God, Behold, I am against you, O Gog, who is the ruler there in Magog in Russia, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. I will turn you around, put hooks in your jaws, and lead you out with all your army, horses and horsemen, all splendidly clothed, the great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya are with them, all of them with shields and helmet. Gomer and all its troops, the house of Togarmah, from the far north and all its troops, many people are with you. Prepare yourself and be ready, you and all your companies that are gathered about you, and be a guard for them. After many days you will be visited. In the latter years you will come into the land of those brought back from the sword and gathered from many people on the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. They were brought out of the nations, and now all of them dwell safely. You will ascend, coming like a storm, covering the land like a cloud, you and all your troops and many people with you. Thus says the Lord God, on that day it shall come to pass that thoughts will arise in your mind, and you will make an evil plan. Now let me skip down a bit, because in verse 13 we see Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish, and all their young lions will say to you, Have you come to take plunder? Have you gathered your army and take booty, to carry away silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, to take great plunder? Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, Thus says the Lord, on that day when my people Israel dwell safely, will you not know it? Now, I just want to read some of those verses to show you some of the different countries involved and who these people are in relation to the countries that they are today. I encourage you to do a study on these chapters, because they are important chapters relating to end times events that are going to unfold. Those are things that could happen any day now. But I don't have time to get into the whole ramifications of that and the importance of those chapters, but I encourage you to do a study on those yourselves one day at home. But we see who these people were and where they began to settle. The sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Rephath, and Togarmah. Now, actually, in verse 2, Madai, I didn't get into them. Madai is the Medes and the Persians, and that is present-day Iran. Now, Javan, we saw them in verse 2, that is Greece. And Tiras is Italy. Okay, these are all descendants of Japhet, the European people that began to settle there in that region. Sons of Gomer were Ashkenaz, Rephath, and Togarmah in verse 3. Togarmah, these people settled in Turkey. Ashkenaz is eastern Germany and getting into some of these eastern European countries such as Poland and such like that. If you go to Israel or if you hear of certain types of Jews, you'll hear of a term Ashkenazite Jew. Ashkenazite Jew. And those are the Jews that went when they were scattered from their land in Israel. They went settled in that region there, in the Ashkenaz region of eastern Germany and some of those eastern European countries. They went and settled there. And the Ashkenite Jews are those that people that have come back. And when they were living in those countries, they began to become very successful, very wealthy. They became very prominent. They've come now back into Israel, many of them. And today they are many times serving in a political role or being very prominent people. They're the Ashkenazite Jew. Now, it's not to say that they are descendants of Japheth. They are descendants of Shem, who simply went and settled and lived for a time in that land of Japheth. Tarshish, as we saw, have we gone to Tarshish yet? We haven't gone to Tarshish. I'm skipping ahead of myself here. Let's continue on in verse 4. The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, oh, there's Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim. And Tarshish is either Spain or England. You remember Jonah? He was the one that wanted to get away and go to Tarshish. Didn't want to go to Nineveh. Forget Nineveh, man. Those people are crazy. I'm not going near there. So I'm getting over to Tarshish. And so he began to set sail. Possibly speaking of Spain or England, or maybe a reference to both. We're not exactly sure on that. But from these, the coastland people of the Gentiles were separated into their land. So you get an idea of their seafaring ways, that they were on the coastland, some of these countries that we're seeing here. And they were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. The sons of Ham now, so we've seen the sons of Japheth, European people, where they began to settle. Now we're looking at the sons of Ham. Ham, remember, his name meant what? Anybody want to throw it out? Black. And Ham had a few sons. Let's look at his sons. Sons were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. Cush is Ethiopia. They began to settle there in Ethiopia. Mizraim is Egypt. Put is Libya. And Canaan is the land of Israel. You think, well, hold on. How come Canaan got in the land of Israel? Weren't the Israelites supposed to? Well, yeah. That was the land that the Lord had set forth for the Israelites to go and inherit. And what were the Israelites supposed to go? Go and wipe out the Canaanite people because of their rebellion and sin. They had gone so far, spiraled down, so far that they had just completely corrupted themselves. The Lord said, it's time for these people to be wiped out. Israelites, when you go into that land, wipe them out. So there was going to be a retaking of that land for the Israelites. And the Canaanites would be wiped out. Now the sons of Cush were Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Rama, and Saptica. And the sons of Rama were Sheba and Dedan. Sheba and Dedan, Saudi Arabia. Descendants of Ham. Now, these are the guys, we saw that name, Sheba and Dedan, there in Ezekiel chapter 38. And they began to say, why are you coming in to basically, you know, loot us of all of our stuff? Why are you coming in here? These are the guys who are going to protest the nations coming down to attack Israel. And part of this attack is going to be against Saudi Arabia because where do we get much of our oil from? Saudi Arabia. This is a wealthy nation. And those people that are coming down are going to see that if they can take over this land and wipe them out, well, they are going to have this supply and this economic power now that the whole world depends on. And if they can wipe out Saudi Arabia, well, they can take ownership of this now and have a lot of control in the world. And so Saudi Arabia, Shimon Dedan, is protesting this invasion that's coming into Israel there in Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39. Now, we see a descendant of Ham, of Cush, more specifically, that we're going to spend a little bit of time with. Verse 8 says, Cush begot Nimrod. Great name. Some of you like to call your buddies that when they're, you know, being a dork or something. Oh, yeah, Nimrod, come on. Well, here he is, a real person in the Bible. Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar. From the land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Rehoboth, and Calah, and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah. This is the principal city. So Nimrod is giving a bit of attention here. A few verses devoted to this person. He is an interesting person in the history of mankind. Nimrod says, it says that he was a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. You can look at this Nimrod guy and go, man, he must have been crafty, a mighty hunter before the Lord. When it says that he was a mighty hunter, what this is implying is that he was a hunter of men's souls. Nimrod's name means rebel. He was a rebellious figure in the Bible. And in fact, he was one that fought against the Lord. It says that he fought, that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. That is saying that he was a mighty hunter in the face of the Lord. He was hunting men's souls in rebellion against the Lord. He was a rebel. And this man Nimrod stands as a type of the Antichrist that is going to come into prominence, that is going to rise into power in the end times. Nimrod stands as a type, a picture of the Antichrist. What kind of kingdom did Nimrod establish? He established the kingdom of Babylon, there in the land of Shinar. Babylon. You will read a lot about Babylon when you begin to look into Revelations. Revelations chapter 17 and 18, to be exact. His kingdom started here with Babylon, and it is going to end. The Antichrist will come and once again establish that kingdom there in Babylon. And it will culminate there in the great Babylon there when it will be wiped out and destroyed. A lot of similarities between the Antichrist that we read of in the Bible and in Revelations and in Daniel with this person Nimrod here. It's very interesting that we are seeing him coming up already, a type of the Antichrist, already coming up in just the 10th chapter, in the beginning of the Bible. He also established another empire, the Assyrian Empire, there in verse 11. He went to Assyria and built Nineveh. Interesting that these are two prominent kingdoms, two prominent empires in Israel's history, as the Assyrians led the 10 northern tribes away in captivity there in 722 BC. They came in and captured them and took them away. And then the Babylonian Empire, they came in and captured Jerusalem and led the tribe of Judah away there in 597 BC. Excuse me. These are two kingdoms, two empires that are not too favored in the eyes of the Israelites. These are two people that caused a lot of havoc, caused a lot of grief in Israel's history. And who was the founder of them? Nimrod, the type of the Antichrist. We are going to look a little bit further. I'm hoping to get into chapter 11. Some of you are going to roll your eyes at that going, oh my goodness. I'm hoping to get into chapter 11 today. And we are going to see the kind of religion that Nimrod is trying to establish there in chapter 11. He is going to be the father of that. He's going to be the head, the originator of that one religion. And it's interesting that the Antichrist, when he comes into position, his goal is to be having that one world government, that one world religion that is going to come against the Lord, in the face of the Lord. This is Nimrod is doing here. Now, let me share a couple interesting things about Nimrod's life. He lived a very interesting life. And as history tells us, things that have been passed down through history, Nimrod married a lady by the name of Semiramis. Semiramis, as the story goes, she had a title called the Queen of Heaven. Queen of Heaven, interesting. Now, she claimed that as Nimrod one day was out battling and hunting, you know, going on one of his, you know, deals, his, you know, men's weekends kind of thing, you know, Semiramis says that she became pregnant. But this pregnancy was not through another person. In fact, it was a divine occurrence that took place. She says, there's no man involved. In fact, it was a virgin birth, is what his wife Semiramis implied. It was a divine occurrence that took place. She became pregnant, conceived this child in the springtime, and it was celebrated in a feast called Ishtar. Now, as the story unfolds, her son was named Tammuz. If you look at Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 14, if you're wondering, Brent, what kind of story are you trying to tell us here? Is there really any truth to this? What is the deal here? Well, let's look at Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 14. As Ezekiel is receiving this vision, it says in verse 14, chapter 8, "So he brought me to the door of the north gate of the Lord's house, and to my dismay, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz." Here he is, the son of Semiramis. They were weeping for Tammuz. Why would they be weeping for Tammuz? What kind of thing was taking place here? Well, as history tells us, Tammuz was out one day. Well, let me backtrack a bit here. Before I get into that, I will get into this right now. He was out one day, and he was basically gored by a wild boar. A wild boar came and killed him. He was dead. But you know what happened? 3 days later, he was revived. He came back to life 3 days later, as the story unfolds. Now, Tammuz, interestingly enough, he was born, I said, or conceived there in the springtime, possibly around April. Well, 9 months, typical pregnancy. Take 9 months from April. You know when they say the date that he was born was? December 25th is when Tammuz was born. And how did they celebrate this? Well, again, they went and had a celebration. Turn to me to Jeremiah chapter 10. Jeremiah chapter 10. Hear the word which the Lord speaks to you, O house of Israel. Everybody listen to this. This is very important here. Very interesting. In Jeremiah 10, verse 2. "Do not learn the way of the Gentiles, who were those that were practicing pagan rituals and following these kinds of pagan feasts. Do not learn the way of the Gentiles. Do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the Gentiles are dismayed at them." The signs of heaven? What was Semiramis' name? Meaning Queen of Heaven? "For the customs of the peoples are futile. For one cuts a tree from the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers so that it will not topple. They are upright like a palm tree, and they cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot go by themselves. Do not be afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, nor can they do any good." Verse 3, "One cuts a tree from the forest. They decorate it with silver and gold." Is this sounding familiar to anybody? I'm kind of getting a deja vu here. This sounds very familiar to me. He was born on December 25th, And this is some of the rituals that they began to celebrate to honor this one person. He was killed, but they say he came back to life 3 days later. And this was something that they began to celebrate in conjunction with his conception there in the springtime with a feast called Ishtar. What would they do? They would go and paint eggs. Bring them together. Eggs being a symbol of continued life. They'd also go and give bunnies as gifts, because bunnies speak of fertility. If you put two bunnies together, it's not going to take long before you have four bunnies. Won't take long before you have 16 bunnies. Won't take long before you got a house full and you begin to open up a bunny farm. You know what I'm saying? They are a symbol of fertility. And this is what they began to exchange with one another there at the Feast of Ishtar that took place in the springtime. Is this very interesting to some of you? This is very interesting to me. Satan, I'm sure, had enough of an idea as to what was going to unfold and concocted this phony and counterfeit story to discredit and dilute the truth. Some of you might be thinking, why do our you know, celebrations, our Christmas time and Easter, why are they so closely related to these events? Is it wrong to celebrate these things? Oh my goodness, I never knew the history of those things. I never knew the origin of Christmas and Easter. Now I'm seeing that they took place in pagan rituals and they have their origins from some kind of pagan celebration. Wow. Well, I believe simply that Satan had enough of an idea as to what was going to happen, that Jesus would be born. I don't believe that Jesus was born on December 25th. I believe it happened more in the fall time. And then we celebrate Jesus' resurrection at Easter. And, you know, I don't know what the eggs and the bunny has to do with Jesus, but those are things that have come along into our celebrations and our holidays. How did this come about? How come Satan's plan now has kind of mingled within our holidays and our focus upon Jesus on these days? What happened? Well, Constantine, the Roman emperor, who came in, or he was in power there, you know, around 340, 50 AD, I can't really even remember myself, but he became converted, got saved. And that was around 350-something AD. And he had a vision and got saved and all. Now, Constantine desired to change these feasts and Christianize them. But instead of getting rid of these pagan practices altogether, what he did was more or less compromised and, in a sense, blended the two. Kind of put a Christian spin on some of these things because there was truth behind the Christian part of it, but began to keep some of these pagan rituals as well and the different practices and customs that they were following. So Constantine, though he was converted, some will even question that, whether or not it was a true conversion, but he made a mistake in not breaking off entirely from those things, but he kind of desired to just Christianize these already pagan festivals to some degree. Compromised, blended the two. Satan's plan was to counterfeit the truth. He knew what was going to come. He knew Jesus was going to be born of a virgin birth. He knew that he was going to die and be risen again. So he concocted his own plan, his own story that was very much along those same lines, so that he could counterfeit the truth, so that there would be people that would begin to get sucked into a lie. When you counterfeit something, you are not going to, if you want to counterfeit money, you're not going to go and counterfeit a $17 bill and go, hey, look, guys, I got a $17 bill. Well, no, because there are no $17 bills. You're going to counterfeit a bill that exists, something that is already real. That's what Satan did. Counterfeited that which was true, that which was going to be true. To deceive people, that is his plan. His purpose is to deceive and to confuse people. And many people have got sucked into some of those kinds of practices and religions. Very interesting story. And that's all it is. These are real people. But the stories have been so, you know, made up and phony just to counter the truth that would be coming through Jesus Christ. Now, some of you are sitting here going, oh man, you know, I have a Christmas tree in my house. We decorate it. Well, let me say this to you. If you do have a tree, I'm sorry to say you are going to hell. And there's just no way around it. Now that we all have seen the truth and know that there's a pagan background to that. Some of you might be sitting here going, oh man, I feel convicted today because I've had Easter eggs. I've had, you know, chocolate bunnies. Those are good, aren't they? Boy, I love them. But let me say this to you. There are those that will take an extreme view and stance on this and say it is completely wrong to have a Christmas tree. It is completely wrong to have anything to do with these pagan practices that have been, you know, in existence for centuries. I've known Christians that come down very hard on a person, you know, and try to reveal the truth of this. Well, let me tell you this. I myself do not have a problem with having a Christmas tree. I don't have a problem with my children going and painting an Easter egg or having a, you know, chocolate bunny. In fact, man, I hope they get lots because I'm going to be right in there eating them myself. But I do not find anything wrong with that because I'll tell you this. Those holidays and those seasons that we celebrate take on a much more important meaning to me than the origins that they have. You see, those things that I look at now are simply pointing me towards Jesus Christ. He is the one that I'm looking to. He is the one that I'm focused on in those times. And so it's not that I'm being sucked into those old practices and going, oh, I'm kind of backsliding. No. Those things today take on a much more important meaning to me now because I'm looking at Jesus Christ. Man, that tree that we bring in can be a picture of the cross, the wooden cross that Jesus died on. The holly that we put up on our door, you know, symbol of the thorns that Jesus wore on his head and the berries that are in there, the red berries, the blood that was shed. You know, those things just, you know, we look towards Jesus now as believers, as Christians. And I don't want anybody to feel guilted into the idea of, oh man, if I have a tree now, boy, that's, you know. But you'd understand that there may be people that have a problem with that. And that's their decision. We don't come down on them, nor should they come down on another person that has the freedom and the liberty in their walk with the Lord to have those things. And Paul talks about that many times in the book of 1 Corinthians. There were people that were squabbling over this idea of eating meat that was sacrificed to idols. Paul said, hey, you know what? If you can do it in good conscience and have the liberty and the freedom to do that, then do it. The bottom line is, just be careful that you are not causing a brother to stumble. And those are the things that we need to look at. But I don't want any person to feel, as we looked at the origins of these holidays that we celebrate, these two major holidays that we celebrate, I don't want anybody to feel guilty about, you know, celebrating. But let us do one thing. We focus in on Jesus Christ. Because that is who we are celebrating. Okay. Nimrod. Let's pick it up in verse 13. Mizraim begot Ludim, Anamim, Lehabim, Naphtuhim, Pathrusim, and Casluhim, from whom came the Philistines and Kaphtorim. Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, the Jebusite, the Amorite, and the Girgashite, the Hivite, the Arkite, and the Sinite. The Sinite people are the Chinese, Japanese, the various Asian people that have their roots in Sinite. Some people, you know, forget this one thing, that we all have a similar background. We are all connected to the same person. It's interesting how people become so prejudiced and racial today. and we look at the exterior, we look at how people look differently, and we think, oh man, people get very racial. But we understand that we have all come from the same background. We all have a similar history. Racism is still very active in our world. And it becomes very easy to blame other people, other groups, other racial groups for all our problems. The Chinese man and Jewish man were eating lunch together. Suddenly, without warning, the Jew gets up, walks over to the Chinese man, and just belts him right in the kisser. Knocks him flying down off his seat. Chinese guy gets up and he's like, what are you doing? What'd you do that for? Jew answered back, said, that's for Pearl Harbor. And the Chinese man sat there and said, Pearl Harbor? I didn't have anything to do with Pearl Harbor. That was the Japanese that bombed Pearl Harbor. The Jew responds, oh, Chinese, Japanese, Taiwanese, they're all the same to me. With that, they both sat down again. Well, it wasn't too long after the Chinese man got up, walked over to the Jew, and he just belted him one, a big right-hand hook. Knocked him flying off the seat again. The Jew yells out, what did you do that for? And the answer comes back, the Titanic. The Titanic? Well, I didn't have anything to do with the Titanic. Whereupon the Chinese man replied, Goldberg, Feinberg, Iceberg, they're all the same to me. And people get very up in arms over different racial backgrounds, racial groups. And then we've all stemmed from Noah. We all came from the same background. If we would have that kind of understanding and look at that. And we see that the way we look, man, it has, you know, reasons because of that and the different lands that people settled in, the way that they were divided, that kind of thing. In fact, I'm going to put some things for us down in front to share after the service. The origin of the human races, and I got this off of the Answers in Genesis website. Take one of these home with you today and read through it, because it gives some understanding as to how the different races, you know, sprouted off and the reason they have different features and different looks to them. So if you're interested in that, take one of those home with you this morning. Verse 18, the Arvadite, the Zemarite, and the Hamathite. Afterward, the families of the Canaanites were dispersed. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon as you go toward Gerar, as far as Gaza, then as you go towards Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim, as far as Lasha. These were the sons of Ham, according to the families, according to their languages, in their lands and in their nations. And children were born also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, the brother of Japheth the elder. Eber, the son of Shem, and Eber is the father of the Hebrews. He's the father of the Hebrews. Remember, Shem was the father of the Semites. That included the Israelites and the Arabs, but now we're breaking that down even further. And this is a line that we are going to begin to focus in on more exclusively. The line of the Hebrew people and Abraham more specifically as we get into it next week. The sons of Shem were Elam, Asher. Interestingly enough, Hebrew means crossed over. This has been a nation, the Hebrew nation, that has had to cross over many times as the Lord was moving them and guiding them and directing them into the promised land, wasn't it? Man, they had to cross over the Red Sea. They had to cross over, first of all, into Canaan. Then they had to cross over across over the Red Sea as they were escaping out of Egypt. Then to enter into that promised land, they had to cross over the Jordan River. Boy, that name becomes very fitting for the very things that they had to do in their history, crossed over. Verse 24, Arphaxad begot Salah, and Salah begot Eber. To Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Interesting here. Interesting verse. In Peleg's days, the earth was divided. There are at least four theories about the meaning of this verse. First of all, the languages and the nations were divided at the Tower of Babel, as we're going to get into very quickly here today. So hold on, okay? Bear with me, because I want to get into that today. The continents, second theory, the continents moved and split. And I think this is unlikely due to the effect that would have had upon those plate movements that would have been taking place. Because if you remove all the water, these are not just islands floating. They're connected. They're grounded. And so if you were just to have these continents begin to break apart and shift, man, that would have caused some severe tidal waves, some severe catastrophic effects. And so I don't believe that it was necessarily just the continents moving and splitting apart. Third theory is that the water came up now and divided the high spots into islands and continents. And I think this is more closely with theory that as the flood came, the ice caps, I think, were formed. Okay? Peleg, it's believed that he was born about 100 years after the flood. And it's possible that the water was now beginning to really recede, and maybe some of those ice caps were melting and beginning to kind of run off. And it's believed that all the continents at one time were connected by some sort of land bridge. And if you remove, and we saw this in one of the videos we looked at, midweek Bible study we had. But if you remove the water, just even shrink it down, even like some places a couple hundred feet, you don't have to go very deep, you'll see that many areas are have this land bridge that goes across them. Alaska to Russia, through the English Channel. You don't have to go very deep, and you'll see that there's these land bridges. And it's possible that after the flood, you ever wonder how some of these animals got to, how'd the kangaroo get to Australia? I didn't know them to be very good swimmers. How'd they get across there? How did some of these animals migrate and get down into some of these lands that are completely, you know, surrounded by water? Well, I believe after the flood, the lands were connected. And some of these animals were able to easily get to where they finally settled. The kangaroo in Australia, the panda bear up in, you know, Asia and all that area. That's where the panda bear lives, right? I don't know my zoology too well, but just want to make sure I'm not embarrassing myself here. Because I do that far too often, and I don't want to do that today. But we see this is how the animals would have gotten to their habitats. And so I believe that in time, in the days of Peleg, that the waters were continuing to, you know, come into play, and we're beginning to cover up some of these land bridges now. And so we see the continents being how they are now. You know what? There's a fourth theory, and that was that the land was surveyed, divided to avoid disputes due to population increase. So people were, in a sense, just kind of separated and divided in that way. And I won't get into that, but verse 26, Joktan begot Almodad, Sheleph, Hazarmaveth, Jerah, Hadaram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, and all those wonderful names there that I'm just going to kind of pass over. But verse 29, we see a name Jobab. This is possibly referring to the Job we see in the Bible. His book is said to be the oldest written in the Bible. So it's possible that we are seeing the first mention of Job here. All these were the sons of Joktan. And their dwelling place was from Mesha as you go toward Sephar, the mountains of the east. These were the sons of Shem, according to their families, according to their languages, in their lands, according to their nations. These were the families of the sons of Noah, according to their generations and their nations. And from these, the nations were divided on the earth after the flood. Now, I'm going to be quick with chapter 11, all right? Are you with me still, guys? Do I have your permission again, chapter 11? You know what? Even if I didn't have your permission, we're going for it. So sorry about that. I shouldn't have given you that option. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. They all had one speech. I wonder what that speech was, what that language was. Some think that maybe it was the Hebrew language. Some think that maybe it's the language that we're going to speak when we're in heaven. Ooh, I wonder what that language that will be. But they were all having one language, communicated the same way. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. It's interesting, we see the quality of the materials they made. And it's evident in that the buildings that were constructed in this day are still standing today. Some have uncovered some of these ancient buildings that were built in this day. Remember that the early people in history were not these caveman type people that couldn't get things done. They were very smart, and I believe God created Adam with full capacity of his brain, and I think that even in this day, people were still very smart, and as sin began to corrupt, you know, the generations, that slowly they began to degenerate till you get stupid like I am today. But in that day, these were smart people. And we see the things that they were able to build. The pyramids, I believe, were built back in this day. And people still wonder, how were they able to build these pyramids? It's a mystery to them. One of the ancient wonders of the world. These were smart guys. And we see that they were building with bricks and you know, bringing them together with that asphalt and mortar for mortar, keeping things waterproof. Some even feel the Tower of Babel has been found. Verse 4, and they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Who's the guy that's kind of heading this up? Somebody throw me out his name. We've already covered his name back in chapter 10. The king of Babylon. Who was he? Nimrod. That's the guy. He's the one that's, I think, behind this, that's heading things up. He was the king of Babylon, and we are seeing the Tower of Babel happening right here in Babylon. The tower was a ziggurat. You're looking at me maybe going, what's a ziggurat, Brent? A ziggurat was almost like a pyramid-shaped structure, but it had stairs on the outside that kind of went up like that, so you'd get all the way to the top. That's what a ziggurat was. And on the top, they'd oftentimes have an altar up there. And they said, let us build a tower whose top is in the heavens. This is a way that they were able to look up and gaze into the heavens. And they were there able to practice religious ceremonies. But it was done in rebellion against God. Why was this done in rebellion against God? What is happening here? Well, they said, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. What did God tell Noah to do when he got off of the ark? Chapter 9, verse 1. This is what God told Noah to do. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Is this what these guys are doing here at the Tower of Babel? God told Noah, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. Just get out there, man. Just begin to spread out. But these people are coming together. Nimrod, his name means rebel. He is in rebellion against God, a type of the Antichrist. And he's bringing the people, the nations together, saying, let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. They are fighting against God's will. And they are building this place, this altar, they can gaze into the heavens. Astrology is big today, isn't it? People turning to their horoscope in the paper. You know, oh, what's my horoscope today? It says I'm going to meet somebody nice today. All right. You know, and they get all excited. And they're looking around, you know, at work. They're going, I wonder who this person is I'm going to meet today. Oh, I'm going to be rich. Oh, I better go buy a lottery ticket today. Says I'm going to come across some money. Yeah. And they just base all their hope on astrology. On their horoscopes. And I think, you know what? It has its roots here at the Tower of Babel. Gazing up into the heavens, looking into the stars. The occult practices, I believe, has its roots in the Tower of Babel. Upon these altars, they would build these things, and they would even go and offer up their children at times. They'd have these gods there, and they would have this fire going, and they'd place the baby there in the arms of these gods and burn and sacrifice the babies. And occult practices has its roots there. Some of these ziggurats that have been found today that they are uncovering in archaeological finds have a connection to crystals. There was possibly some sort of communication purpose through this. Interesting, in today's New Age movement, crystals play a big part in it, doesn't it? people have crystals hanging down from their, you know, rear view mirror in their car. If you have a crystal today, I don't mean to point you out, but, you know, just maybe chuck that thing. But, you know, it's got its roots in the Tower of Babel. New Age practices. Nimrod was desiring to bring the world together in opposition against God. Friends, it's the same thing we're going to see in end times with the Antichrist. We are already seeing it taking place today, aren't we? With the United Nations, the European Union. Everything is moving towards this one world government. Everything is moving towards this one world currency. One world religion. Oh, we've got to come together, people. The Catholic Church, the United Church, you know. All these different churches, we've got to come together and form this one world government. It's not going to happen without compromise. And we're already seeing it today with churches that are being accepting of homosexual marriages now. Even their pastors being homosexuals. We're seeing such a compromise taking place in the church today. And it is going to be in the face of the Lord in the end times that they are going to try to bring, you know, this one world religion together. It's got its roots right here in Babylon, friends. We're seeing it right here in Genesis 11. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. I believe this was what's called a Christophany. I believe that this was the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ coming down as a man, coming and seeing what was going on. The Lord came down to see the city and tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Friends, that is a sad verse in the Word of God. The Lord says, now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. God has given man free will, the ability to do as he chooses. Yet what has that, where has that taken man? It's taken man into corruption. It's taken man into violence. It's taken man into a place of living out every wildest fantasy in his heart, of doing whatever he chooses to do. And you just turn on the news, you look at the newspaper, and you see the kinds of wickedness that is taking place in our society today. It stems from here. Nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Man is going to be left alone to destroy himself. Yes, there's that open door to come and repent and turn to the Lord. And I pray that every person here has done that. But ultimately, man has been left alone to choose for himself which way he will go. Whether he will turn to the living God and find life in him, or whether he will turn to his own ways. And that road leads to destruction. There is a way that seems right unto man, but in the end it leads unto death. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. Here's a reference to the Trinity. Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Come, let us come down. Not just one person saying, I'm going to go down, but come, let us go down. And there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Could you imagine? Think about this scene here for a second. They're there, they're building this tower. They're all talking to one another. Yeah, man, hey, great hammering going on there. Hey, nice design on that artwork there. I like that. They're all talking. All of a sudden, the Lord comes down. They're talking, all of a sudden they just, blah, 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 blah. What are you saying? They're just like, they're going, what's going on? What's happening? And they just begin to flee. They begin to be scattered because all of a sudden there's division now. He has confused their languages. Do you ever hear somebody that just going on and they're just making no sense? You go, man, you're just babbling. I don't know what you're saying. That's where it's coming from right here. Babel. Tower of Babel. And many people today are just, they're babblers. You might be looking at me going, Brent, you're babbling right now. Just move the thing on, okay? We need to get out of here. Lunch is coming. Yes, I might be babbling. But this is where it comes from, where people, the God has come and confused their languages. And that's what Babylon refers to as confusion. When you go and try to do things apart from the Lord's will, it's ultimately going to leave you in just a state of confusion. Many of us have maybe gone and followed similar practices where we said, you know what, I need to go and make a name for myself. And we fight against what maybe the Lord intends. Lord, I know you got a plan for me, but you know what, I got to go and make a name for myself. I got to go and do this. And the pride begins to just well up. And we think we're strong and we can be rebellious. And we oppose the things of the Lord. You know what, it's going to leave you in a state of confusion. It's going to leave you in a place of just drifting aimlessly, wandering, when you turn your back from the Lord. The Lord does not desire you to be walking in confusion. He desires you to come to Him, to learn from Him, to grow in Him, and to have Him as the Lord of your life. Because it's in that place that we do not wander around aimlessly. We have a God who is leading us and directing us. Yes, there might be days where, you know, we're unsure. We don't know what we need to do, but we take that step of faith. We know the Lord is never going to let us down or forsake us. He will be faithful. Now we need to follow His will and not follow the religion of this Babylon that simply ends in confusion. Verse 10, this is the genealogy of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, begot Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Now, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to read through all these verses here. It's going to go through the descendants of Shem. What is happening here now, guys? The book of Genesis, what a great book it is. Man, I've enjoyed it so far. We've only gotten through 11 chapters. But so far, we've been looking at some very significant events in the history of man, in the history of the world. So far in the first 10 chapters, 11 chapters of Genesis, we've been looking at some major events. Genesis is the book of beginnings. And we've seen the beginning of man. We've seen the beginning of the world, God's creation. We've seen the beginning of man. We've seen the beginning of marriage. We've seen the beginning of marital arguments. Adam's going, Lord, she's the one that made me eat of the fruit. It's not me. Lord, it's her fault. Passing the book. Well, we've seen the beginning of the family. Unfortunately, we've seen the beginning of sin. We've seen the beginning of murder. We've seen the beginning of cities. We've seen the beginning of religion. We've seen the beginning of false religion here today. We've seen the beginning of many things, important things. The flood, different events that have taken place. And so far, God has been dealing with us in different events that have unfolded the beginning of things. But now, we are going to be taking a big turn in the book of Genesis. Because God is now going to be dealing personally with men. Not looking at the first of things, not looking at these big events. Creation, the flood, and the Tower of Babel, all these things. But now we are going to be concentrating on this line of Shem, father of the Semitic people, Eber, the father of the Hebrews. It's going to lead us down to Abraham, through whose seed the nations will be blessed. And now as we go through the rest of Genesis, we're going to be looking at individuals. Let me tell you this. God is interested in individuals. God is interested in you. He's not just looking at things as the big picture and saying, well, you're just kind of an insignificant pawn in the plan of all these things. No, He is interested in you and wants to invest into you. Do you understand that today? And we're going to see that now in the rest of Genesis as we continue to go through our study here, because we're going to be looking at Abraham. Then we're going to be looking exclusively at Isaac, Jacob, looking at Joseph. Oh, these are great people in the Bible. And God is interested in individuals. And all of this, these people, why these people? Because it is the line that He is going to bring the Messiah through into the world. This is an important line. And these are the people that we're going to be looking at. Real quickly, verse 27. This is the genealogy now of Terah. Terah begot Abram. This is Abraham's father now. Nahor and Haran. Haran begot Lot. Verse 28, and Haran died before his father Terah in his native land in Ur of the Chaldeans. Then Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. And Terah took his son Abram, and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife. And they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Chapter 12 is going to show us. We're going to get in chapter 12 in just a minute. I think we're going to go through chapter 12 today too. Kidding you. Next week we're going to get in chapter 12. Some of you are going, man, that guy doesn't have nice jokes. I don't like that guy. Genesis 12 is going to show us that God told Abraham to get out of your country and from your family. Look with me right there in verse 1. Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. What was that land? Canaan, the promised land. The Lord said, get away from your land. They were living in Ur of the Chaldeans. This was a very prominent place, a wealthy place. It's been said that this was the first place where they had baths. Hot tubs, man. It was a glorious place. Kind of like a nice resort. All right, Ur of the Chaldeans. They were to get out of there. What happens now in verse 31? Terah took his son Abram and others. Terah's the one that's leading now Abram. What did God tell Noah or Abram to do? To leave your country and your family, to get out of your father's house. But something happened now where Terah begins to lead Abram. That wasn't the Lord's will, was it? Wasn't the Lord's choice. And what happened? They ended up in a place called Haran. Was Haran Canaan? No. This wasn't the place that God told them to go to. Haran was in fact on the Babylonian border, I think, as they moved down. It was just about there, but they rested at the border. They didn't quite cross over yet. Terah, his name means delay. And this is what happened in Abraham's life. He got delayed. Delayed 15 years because he did not obey and follow God's word. You know what? We can easily delay God's plan for our lives by choosing to not fully obey what he wanted us to do. Many people are in that place of delay where they're just kind of sitting there and waiting. They haven't yet quite crossed over. They haven't quite received what God had planned for them because they have decided that they are not going to quite fully obey, and they've been left in that place of delay. Haran's been said to be called a place of barrenness. And when you delay and not walk forward, man, you're going to be in that place of just dissolution and barrenness. It's going to be empty. It's going to be dry. Instead of moving forward in obedience, taking that step of faith, doing what God asks you to do, and seeing His word begin to be fulfilled in your life and begin to see His plans unfold. That's a glorious place to be, my friends, when we move forward and see God's working in our lives. Abraham was learning some lessons here. But the Lord is going to lead him out of that place of barrenness and into the promised land of Canaan. We're going to see that next week in chapter 12.